Blog Talk Radio.
Citizens of Africa, I greet you in the name of the Universal Negro Movement Association and African Communities League of the World. You may ask, what organization is that? It is for me to inform you that the Universal Negro Movement Association is an organization that seeks to unite into one solid body the 400 million Negroes of the world. The link of the 15 million Negroes of the United States of America with the 20 million Negroes of the West Indies, the 40 million Negroes of South and Central America with the 280 million Negroes of Africa for the purpose of bettering our industrial, commercial, educational, social, and political conditions. As you are aware, the world in which we live today is divided into separate race groups and distinct nationalities. Each race and each nationality is endeavoring to work out its own destiny to the exclusion of other races and other nationalities. We hear the cry of England for the Englishman, of France for the Frenchman, of Germany for the German, of Ireland for the Irish, of Palestine for the Jew, of Japan for the Japanese, of China for the Chinese. We of the Universal Negro Movement Association are raising the cry of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. There are 400 million Africans in the world who have Negro blood coursing through their veins. And we believe that the time has come to unite these 400 million people for the one common purpose of bettering their conditions. The great problem of the Negro for the last 500 years has been that of disunity. No one or no organization ever succeeded in uniting the Negro race. But within the last 4 years, the Universal Negro Movement Association has worked wonders in bringing together in one fold 4 million organized Negroes who are scattered in all parts of the world, be it in the 48 states of the American Union, all the West Indian Islands, and the countries of South and Central America and Africa. These 4 million people are working to convert the rest of the 400 million scattered all over the world, and it is for this purpose that we are asking you to join our ranks and to do the best you can to help us to bring about an emancipated race. If anything praiseworthy is to be done, it must be done through unity. And it is for that reason that the Universal Negro Movement Association calls upon every Negro in the United States to rally to this standard. We want to unite the Negro race in this country. We want every Negro to work for one common object, that of building a nation of his own on the great continent of Africa. But all Negroes all over the world are working for the establishment of a government in Africa, means that it will be realized in another few years. We want the moral and financial support of every Negro to make this dream a possibility. Already, this organization has established itself in Nigeria, West Africa, and is endeavoring to do all possible to develop that Negro country to become a great industrial and commercial commonwealth. Pioneers have been sent by this organization to Nigeria, and they are now laying the foundations upon which the 400 million Negroes of the world will build. If you believe that the Negro has a soul, if you believe that the Negro is a man, if you believe the Negro was endowed with a senses commonly given to other men by the Creator, then you must acknowledge that what other men have done, Negroes can do. We want to build up cities, nations, governments, and justice of our own in Africa so that we'll be able to have a chance to rise from the lowest to the highest position in the African Commonwealth.
And greetings. Hold on a moment. Okay, there we go. Greetings, family. Welcome to this another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet, and of course we just heard none other than the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. That particular speech was a part of course, a much larger speech, longer speech rather, and it took place in July of 1921. So now, family, over now, well, 100 years ago, 100 years ago, we had someone in our midst that was saying these types of things that many are saying today, of course, but the point is, here we are again talking about unity. The Honorable Marcus Garvey just spoke about what we must do, unity. And, of course, over the years, that's been a major conversation for many. But where and how is it really happening? Well, the time has come, needless to say, and it's not to say that we haven't seen some examples of it at some points in time. However, the sustainability of real unity for Black people in the U.S., well, I've got to say, it's been fleeting at best. And, of course, there are a few examples, and we are so thankful for those examples. We are thankful for the Nation of Islam. We are thankful for the Osarset Society. We are thankful for a few of the other groups and organizations that have remained intact based on their philosophy, based on their mission, based on, you know, the things that keep them connected and in some ways have, of course, helped our people in some kinds of ways. Well, it's time to now broaden those bases, strengthen what is already there, and now develop new and even perhaps more dynamic movements and interactions and other things. Well, this program tonight, I'm sure, is going to be inspirational to many of you and hopefully not just inspirational and motivational, but also getting this stuff moving the way it needs to be happening in this day and age in the 21st century. Family, we are going to talk tonight, and it is such an honor to have him with us again. It's been a couple of years, actually, now that when I look at it, but we're going to talk with the son of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, Dr. Julius Garvey. And now we're going to talk about how we can make history. MWM, of course, is always about making history every day. So even though this is Black History Month and there's a special emphasis on us at this particular time, certainly we can indeed make history, which is what we're going to talk about tonight when it comes to the exoneration of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. This should be able to happen like tomorrow in terms of what is necessary, what's required, what's being asked for. And technically, at this point in time, 100,000 signatures. Now, y'all know, with social media in this day and age, 100 million signatures is nothing in no time. I mean, folks do that on Facebook within a matter of hours. So certainly, the request is that this happens by the end of Black History Month, meaning February the 28th. Now, it just so happened on February 28th, MWM would be making a very important announcement as well as pertains to our 25-year anniversary. You're going to hear about our first effort in obtaining a few buildings here in Philadelphia. One of them is going to be the Harriet Tubman Justice and Humanities Center. We'll be telling you about that when we make the announcement on February the 28th. And also what we're looking at forming here in Philadelphia is the National Black Women's Institute. We'll be telling you more about that a little later on. But back to tonight's program. Again, we're going to bring in Dr. Julius Garvey in a few moments. We want to, of course, let everyone know that tonight we're going to also open up the chat room for those who can't call in. We're going to open up the chat room, and we are going to, of course, make sure that, you know, those comments and so forth are able to, you know, be heard as well, okay? So, again, tonight we're going to talk about justice for Garvey. And we connect that family with our We Talk Genocide 21 project that you all are more than likely, I hope you are familiar with it by now, because we've been talking about it for the past almost 5 years. And so certainly we are now bringing it forward with our first pre-plebiscite session that is coming up in September, to be exact, September the 1st through the 4th, Labor Day weekend. We will be holding our first pre-plebiscite session in Washington, D.C. It will also be online. And so, you know, there's no reason why folks could not be involved and be a part of this historic event and gathering. So without further ado, family, we're getting ready to bring in Dr. Julius Garvey. Of course, Dr. Garvey is a medical physician. He's a certified cardiologist, and also he's a surgeon in vascular medicine. Medicine in New York. He is affiliated with the Northwell Health System and is clinical associate professor of surgery at Albert Einstein College and Medicine. Of course, he has done many, many kinds of discussions and forums and presentations, of course, visited many countries throughout Africa, and now is heading up, of course, this very, very important campaign known as Justice for Garvey, the exoneration of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. Also, Dr. Julius Garvey has been involved with the Stephen Biko Foundation. And, you know, we have a special program in place for the great Stephen Biko. So without further ado, family, what I hope you all are prepared to do is to not only give your full attention, but also to get ready. Get ready. The time is amongst us. We all know that. Also, a little later on, we're going to be talking with a couple of brothers who is going to share some of their views about the discussion for tonight, but also share their support for this exoneration campaign. And, of course, those brothers that we'll be talking with is Minister Ishmael Islam. He is the minister of the Lost Foundation of the Nation of Islam here in Philadelphia. We're going to also talk to our Baba Oduna, Professor Oduna. He is a Garveyite, has been for years, and he's based, of course, in Washington, D.C. He's also very much into agriculture, and, of course, he's a historian. And we're going to also talk with Brother Shaka Barak, who is the director of the Marcus Garvey Institute in Chicago, and it's because of Brother Shaka that we were able to reconnect with Dr. Julius Garvey. So we are very thankful to him. And of course, my sister, his wife, I would be remiss if I didn't mention my sister, Sister Kamar, who was one of our key coordinators in Chicago in 1997 that brought 60,000 black women to Philadelphia for the original and historic Million Woman March. Well, wait till you see what we have coming up next. Some of y'all made some big mistakes. You didn't really see the bigger picture, and unfortunately, you're going to get a spanking. But at any rate, let's go to our live line, and let's bring in and welcome Dr. Julius Garvey. Of course, we are now talking about the exoneration of the great Marcus Garvey. Greetings, Dr. Garvey. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, thank you. Good to be with
you. Yes, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, we met and spoke. It's been a while now, but hopefully we'll be able to stay in contact this time, and we would love to have you join us as an advisor for our We Charge Genocide 21 project that's now in effect. And, of course, one of the 21 areas that we're focusing on is COINTELPRO. We are exposing the whole thing of COINTELPRO. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the mic over to you because I know it's late in the evening, but please just be so kind to let's go into a little bit of the history. I'm sure all of our listeners are familiar with Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Marcus Garvey, but if there's something that you want to in particular share about him, please feel free to do so now.
Well, you know, you just mentioned COINTELPRO, and, you know, J. Edgar Hoover cut his teeth on Marcus Garvey. You know, back in 1919, he had an internal memo in the Justice Department there before it became the FBI. And it said, you know, there's a Negro agitator up in Harlem, and we've got to find some way to get him. He hasn't broken any laws yet, but we've got to get him. So, you know, he hired the first FBI agents, black FBI agents, to infiltrate the organization. And from there, they tried to find something legally or otherwise to get mm-hmm. rid of Marcus Garvey. Interestingly, that same year, 1919, somebody came into the office there at the Liberty Hall in Harlem and shot my dad 4 times. They caught him, and the police got him, put him in jail. But somehow he committed suicide in the first 24 hours within custody. So, somebody didn't want him to spill the beans. So, they tried to get my dad. You know, he traveled a lot. He had a secretary. And, they were peeping through keyholes in the hotel rooms and so on to try to find him in some kind of, immoral sexual activity or what have you. They couldn't find mm-hmm. anything. And then they tried to get him on tax evasion, but the salary that he was supposed to be getting, he never even got that. So they had to drop mm-hmm. the tax evasion charge. So, and then they went finally on the Black Star Line thing where they had absolutely no evidence, there was perjury and so on and so forth. But the point was that it was political. It was an attempt to destroy him and the organization, because at that time he had mobilized, 1920s, early 1920s. Mm-hmm. He had mobilized about 2 million people by 1920, when they had that first international convention of the Negro peoples of the world. And they propounded, the rights of the Negro peoples of the world, 54, statements of what was happening around the world and what needed to be done to correct that. So that was our Magna Carta. That was the beginning of our Pan-African nation. That's where we got the red, black, and green. That's where mm-hmm. we got the anthem, Ethiopia, the land of our fathers. That's mm-hmm. when we got the holiday, August the 31st, as the holiday for all African people. So he built essentially a nation in exile, and he was attempting to unite all, African people. At that time, he said there were 400 million. Now, of course, we have at least 1.3 million. So the essence is still the attempt for unity, for our own identity as African people, mm-hmm. and for mm-hmm. our own, self-development. And this is where we're at. And, as we know, the FBI has subverted, all of our movements over time. They've either attempted to destroy them from within or from without. They've assassinated people. Mm-hmm. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, the Panthers, they destroyed the Panthers. I mean, that was vicious. All of that is COINTELPRO. All of that is J. Edgar Hoover. And all of that is the system, working either through the judiciary or in some sense extra-legally. And, of course, we know the police are militarized and they kill our young people in the streets. And, they criminalize us one way or another. And we make up, 40% of the prison population. So, the attempt at the present time now is to clear my dad's name. It's 100 years pretty much since the charges, they were false. And, we need to have our own heroes. We need to have our own ideals. We need to have our young people be able to look up to those who are really, trying to make us progress, shall we say. And, we have been miseducated, as Carter G. Woodson would say, the miseducation of the Negro. And as my dad would say, we have to liberate our minds from mental slavery. So this is our job, to liberate our minds, to free our minds, and to free our people so that we develop our own communities, our own systems, through our own traditions and our own culture, which is the oldest in the world. And we need to respect that. And we need to have other people respect that. We don't just need to be copies of other people, or we don't need to necessarily sit at their table in terms of what's called integration. It's not integration in terms of assimilation, but we can be independent and still be integrated. So that was what my dad was all about. And, we are attempting now to clear his name with that pardon. The posthumous presidential pardon, which is essentially an exoneration, and we're looking for those 100,000 signatures in the month of February.
Mm-hmm. And again, Dr. Garvey, needless to say, with social media, 100,000 signatures is nothing to do. And, and I'm saying, and I say this, I have said it before, but I'm going to make a real point of it now. If we cannot, those of us who, say we are Pan-Africanists, Black nationalists, progressives, or what have you, if we cannot demonstrate at least something like this, again, to make certain that this kind of campaign, manifests. And I mean, ASAP, if we can't do that, then all this other stuff that people are talking about is just, really fantasy. If we can't get 100,000 signatures, which I know we can and will, but I'm just saying, now we're going to really be able to see to a greater extent what I call modern-day treason in our community. Because we have people who do a lot of talking about, you know, this is what we should do, or this is what, but their actual actions demonstrate something totally different. And again, I'm taking the liberty to say these are new forms of treason in our communities. And so, again, we now need to do a little polling or at least a better observation of who is exactly supporting what. And lastly, we say this about our political prisoners. Anyone that doesn't support, and I'm talking about a person who claims to be about our justice and liberation, not people who don't know, people who supposedly, you know, read and went to lectures and got the BBBs and all of that. If we cannot support the freedom of our political prisoners, just as with Yabo Marcus Garvey, people who demonstrated through their work and commitment, if we can do something to help free them, and in this case, to exonerate, to clear their name, then, you know, what can we say? People need to just shut up, go back to sleep or do something else, but stop faking the phone. And let's get this stuff done. But Dr. Garvey, before we go more into the campaign, could you share with us some of maybe your fondest memories of your dad and also your mother? Because a lot of times we don't hear conversations about the great Amy Josh Garvey, who, of course, when your father was incarcerated, was a major, you know, entity in keeping the things going. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my mother really raised, you know, myself and my brother. You know, I was 5 years old the last time I saw him. My brother was 3 years older than me, so he would have been 8 years. And we came back from England to Jamaica, and he died 2 years later. So that, you know, our memories are really childish memories, especially mine. You know, our mother raised us and raised us with his memory. And, you know, she was his right-hand man, if you will, you know, when he was alive. As you know, she wrote, she published, collated and published The Philosophy and Opinions, Volume 1 and 2, when he was in prison in Atlanta. She ran the organization, too, in his absence. And, of course, you know, when he was there, she was the secretary, plus the fact that she did the woman's page for the Negro World magazine, Weekly, which you know, had a circulation of 75,000 at the time, was the largest Negro weekly in the world, not just in the United States. So, you know, she was very, very instrumental in helping him. And certainly then after he died and carrying on his name, she was a member of the UNIA in Jamaica, and you know, she brought along a number of young people who came to her, you know, for knowledge of the inside working, you know, of the organization. People such as Tony Martin, etc., you know, Bobby Hill, and so on. So you know, and with us, myself and my brother, she raised us. You know, on her own, because like I said, he died in 1940. Fortunately, you know, on her side of the family, she had some wealth, and so she was able to raise us properly in terms of schooling. But she always maintained, you know, his memory to us, so that we grew up, you know, knowing who he was. And she never brought anybody else into the house. She never remarried. She never had any relationships with any other man. So she was committed to him, and she was committed to us in terms of developing us. Because even though, you know, she was in her own right a celebrity, and, you know, politically they wanted her to run for office, but what, she would campaign for others, but she didn't want to run for office because the obligations would be too great, and then she wouldn't be able to take care of us, myself and my brother. So, you know, she sacrificed for us as she had sacrificed for him. So, like I said, I was raised, you know, I was fathered by my mother, so to speak, and so was my older brother. And, you know, she instilled in us, you know, significant virtues and, you know, character. I mean, saying, you know, telling us, you know, who he was, and we had to live up, you know, to that degree of excellence, et cetera. And we couldn't bring any disgrace on the name, et cetera, and so on. And, you know, so that we had to be good students and of good character and so on and so forth. So she really had quite a high bar, you know, and my brother was quite brilliant and, you know, he became a physicist, electrical engineer and so on. Mm-hmm. I did my stuff in terms of medicine. So she did a pretty good job all around, I would say.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Okay. All right, family. Well, again, we are talking with Dr. Julius Garvey, and, of course, we are talking about the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and certainly as it pertains now to the national, international campaign, but, of course, national because that's where the paperwork, et cetera, has to be filed. So with that said, Dr. Garvey, share with us a bit about the campaign. What you know, we know that we need to do the signatures. So give us a little bit of insight into how does this work? You know, what once we get the signatures and where does it go and all of that, please help our family to have a little more insight into that.
Yes, there's a link. You have to go to our website, justiceforgarvey.org, justice, the number 4, garvey.org, and then you'll find a link there which is a link to the White House. It will link you to the president, and then it will ask you for personal information about yourself, such as name and address. It doesn't matter whether you're a citizen or what part of the world you're from. It just asks you, you know, simple information about yourself. And then it asks you, well, what is this you want from the president? And it prompts you, and then you just have to write in there, exonerate Marcus Garvey. So it's a relatively relatively simple pre-step thing. Well, once you get the link from our website, justiceforgarvey.org, you'll get the link there. And then once you go to that link, it will take you to the president, give you personal information, and then it will prompt you and ask you, well, what is it you want from the president? And you'll say, exonerate Marcus Garvey. You'll write, exonerate Marcus Garvey. So that's the process, and we wish everybody listening, you know, would do that. And I've done mine already, so I'm committed. And,
you
know, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your organizations, whatever. You know, we do want that 100,000 because, you know, we did this before in 2016 with Obama. You know, we put all of the information in front of him in terms of the legal information about the trial, all the injustices of the trial. We have a law firm, Aiken Gump, House Strauer, which is a Washington-based international law firm, which went through the whole trial and you know, part in terms of the inaccuracies, the injustices, and so on. We placed that on Obama's desk, but he did nothing with it. So now, you know, we're going the route of the petition with the same information, but now we have the petition, which should according to the system is set up, if you have 100,000 signatures, then the president has to answer whatever the request is. So that's where we are at.
Okay. So once the 100,000 signatures are obtained, it then goes to the president, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So lastly, and then if we have time, can we get maybe just one or two callers in, questions in? But the thing I wanted to also note is, can you give us some idea of some of the, particularly the black elected officials and or entertainers or other people who have already signed on? Because we need to know who it is that we vote for or buy their records or whatever. We need to know who these people are or not. So could you share a little bit about some of who have shown support?
Well, you know, basically, you know, Yvette Clark, who's the representative for New York, she's in full support. As a matter of fact, she has before Congress House Resolution 148, which is to exonerate Marcus Garvey. So that's pretty much almost a separate effort because they both go together. So she's very much in support. Donna Christensen, who was previous congresswoman from the Virgin Islands, she's very much in support of us. We don't have, you know, big name athletes or anything like that. But we do have people like Paul Coates. We do have Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is very, very helpful. And,
Black Classic Press.
You know, so there are people who are, you know, coming on board in terms of the name type people. But, you know, the outreach has been worldwide, and we have a lot of, you know, the Caribbean politicians, ex-prime ministers and current prime ministers who have come on board and will be writing and are calling to Biden. So it's picking up internationally as well.
Great, great. And family, I want everyone to know that National Human Rights and Universal Movements will be submitting our endorsement letter for this project. And also with that, we're asking you all, if you are members of organizations, groups, or other kinds of cadres or collectives, we are also asking that you submit or develop a endorsement letter. And, of course, with that, making sure that you go to the website and sign on to the petition. Now, the other thing that we're requesting and suggesting is, particularly Black folks in our communities, many have voted for various people in your community. We're asking that you contact some of them. Make your vote count in a way that is beneficial for us, those of us who are seeking self-determination, justice, and liberation. Contact your local elected official and ask them to sign on to the petition. I'm meeting with a few elected officials here in Philly as we're preparing for the Million Woman March 25, and I certainly will be asking them, or at least providing them with information about this exoneration. So again, those are some of the things that we can also do now. You can also send emails to your elected official to, if nothing else, advise them, send them the link to the website and advise them, you know, that you would appreciate that they support this effort, given the fact that many have supported their campaigns. Okay, so those are some of the things that we're saying and requesting that you do, family. Dr. Garvey, is there anything else that you could think of or that you'd like to share that maybe we can do?
No, I think what you just said was important, that you, individuals can contact their own congress members or politicians in their area to gain their support, because it all helps in the Congress as well as outside the Congress. So that's very important, what you just mentioned.
Absolutely. And again, in this day and age, it's really just a question of, you know, sending an email or a text and just, you know, send the information and request people, you know, support. That takes 5-10 minutes at the most, family. So come on, y'all. We can do this. We must do this. If we can't do this, come on. All this other stuff about this and that and the other that really is going to take some time and effort. Again, if we can't do this, we can forget the other stuff. Okay, before we let Dr. Garvey go, if there's a quick question that someone has or comment, we're going to give you the opportunity to do so. Only a few minutes, though, and make your comment and question brief, but you can press one now. And then, of course, very shortly, we're going to talk to our sister, Tawanda Jones. I see that she's in queue. And then later on, we're going to talk more about the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And again, examining COINTELPRO, you know, keeping in mind, I mean, Dr. Garvey just told us that, you know, the situation or the attack on the Honorable Marcus Garvey was really kind of the first, at least that we know, when it comes to a Black leader. I'm sure what's-his-name was doing stuff anyway, but we have the proof of J. Edgar Hoover and his, you know, his Gestapo kind of people, FBI, whatever. We have the proof of what they did. And then, of course, to fast forward and bring it into the 1960s, 1970s with, of course, Dr. King, Malcolm X, and needless to say, the Black Panther Party. Oh, by the way, Dr. Garvey, I don't know if you know, we're going to be talking about this at one of our upcoming sessions, but one of the things that happened that really exposed COINTELPRO in terms of documents really kind of happened right outside of Philadelphia. It's a you know, a little suburb called Media, but there was a break-in roughly 50-something years ago now, where this group broke into the FBI headquarters right outside of Philly and literally seized documents, right? And this was the first, according to the reports and the stuff we researched, this was the first actual documents, and I mean real stuff, of what they were doing, who they were doing it to, how and why. They didn't go in there expecting to get that, but ended up, you know, seeing it and then, you know, liberated it, as we say. And that's when the first real proof was provided about what they were doing, because these was actual correspondences, original documents, et cetera. Before they was blacking them out, they got access to those things. So just that you know, family, this is the kind of stuff that we are going to, you know, make folks aware of when we do our teach-ins. Again, we're preparing for the first pre-plebiscite session so that, Dr. Garvey, we can begin to examine what do we want to be called now? How do we want to be governed? Where do we want to live? Those kinds of things. That's what a pre-plebiscite is going to put us in the position to do. You see, you know, because again, we talk about unity, but how, particularly in this day and age, is that going to happen? You see? So now those who are interested in certain things will have the capability to vote. We've never had this happen. All this emancipation stuff and all of that. We haven't had, except again, with examples such as the UNIA ACL that had and have a government, you see. And so now we've learned from some of that and are preparing to advance and to move forward as such. And by the way, one of my teachers, one of my elders, rather, was the great Reman Battles, who was one of the president. Brother Baba like, Battles. Yes, indeed. And so that was, he, you know, kind of put me under his wing. And, you know, I will always, always appreciate it because Philly is a monster, you know, meaning you don't talk about self-determination in Philly and really survive. It's just, you know, very rare. These people are vicious in the city. And so Baba Battles, you know, he embraced me always and, you know, always encouraged me and told me this, Dr. Garvey. He said, look, you must institutionalize your work. And at the time, I understood it, but I didn't quite get it. But that's the lead. 15 years later, I got it. I get it.
Good.
So, yeah, so those are the kind of things that he would, you know, say to me to help, you know, guide me in some very interesting kinds of ways. But anyway, it doesn't seem like anybody has a question or a comment, which is fine, family, because we can move right along. But Dr. Garvey, again, hoping we could stay in touch. And please give that website one more time.
Yes, it's justice4garvey.org. justiceforgarvey.org. The link is there.
All right. All right, family. So we are now down to 23 days we have to do this.
Yeah.
And like, again, I have faith in y'all, so I know this is going to happen like in 2 days at the most, okay? There's no way that y'all can tell me or anybody can tell me that other people can put calls out, and they asking for money, by the way. People have raised millions of dollars to help get murderers out of jail. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I don't need to go into the details. Y'all know. And this has happened like in 48 hours. They raised millions of dollars to get people who have killed us out of jail or for their defense. So y'all telling me we can't get some signatures? Ooh, well, we shall see. All right, Dr. Garvey, thank you.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely, and we'll stay in touch. And again, we're going to do this. We're going to do this.
Okay, though.
All right, sir. Good evening to you.
Take care. Peace and blessings.
Peace to you. All right, family. Well, there you go. You know, we are moving forward in such a way that we are connecting again to the history and legacy of those who have come before us who've made serious headway. Family, my apologies. I'm trying to open up the chat room, and something is going wrong here. So I'm going to continue to try because I know some of you are listening and using your computers and would like to chime in, but for some reason it's not letting me do that. But I am going to continue to try nevertheless, and we'll let you know if I'm able to open this thing up as we're talking. At any rate, we're going to move forward to the next segment of our program. Again, our sister Tawanda Jones is in the house. Certainly, I think this week is 445. I believe 445. She'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it's definitely close to it if I'm not. And we're talking about West Wednesdays. Now, again, you know, some folk seem to think, for whatever reason, that if you do something like now or next week or, you know, even a year, even 2 years or whatever, that, you know, that's doing something. Well, I mean, it is to some extent, but I can tell you, if you're talking about trying to get some justice, if you're talking about trying to fight this enemy, et cetera, those kinds of things, I can guarantee you it ain't going to happen with this little, you know, Kool-Aid stuff that folks be trying to do. It's really interesting that I've had the opportunity over the years to really have a better understanding, overstanding, as some say, about some things. I've wondered over the years why we have not advanced. So I stayed in Philly. I could have lived anywhere in the world that I wanted to at some point. But I stayed in Philly because I knew that there were answers here that would definitely help me and others to get clarity about what's really going on in certain things. Well, let me tell you, ooh-wee. And am I getting ready to tell it? Oh, you best believe. Because it's not just here. When we talk to Sister Tawanda, you'll hear it with her. When we talk with Sister Keisha, and by the way, you know, greetings, Sister Keisha. I know you're probably tuning in, and if not, greetings anyway. Brother Mike and our crew from New York. But family, the point is, some of us are really fed up because we're saying the same things in from different cities, but we're dealing with the same kind of things. Negroes, and I'm not talking about Negro in the context of Honorable Marcus Garvey. So let's be real clear. Let's be real clear. We're talking about the created Negro that the system has brought about that's still in our midst. And thank you for Sister Manira. She called them Negropeans. So that's one of the terms that we've gotten. Okay. And it's on point. It is so on point. Anyway, let's go try that now. This time with our sister, Commander Jones, going to bring her in the house. And by the way, family, for those of you who are interested in participating in the WeChat Genocide 21, give you more information about that. The call for papers is now in effect. Now through March the 31st, I'm going to keep putting it out there because I don't want people to say, I didn't know, and all of that. Again, I'm giving you more information about that tonight. Of course, tonight we've been talking about COINTELPRO, political prisoners, and other things that's relevant to prison and police and governmental terrorism. Those are some of the areas, the 21 areas of our We Charge Genocide 21. And so, again, those 21 areas also include gentrification, environmental racism, medical apartheid. Again, there's 21 areas. So when we talk with Sister Tawanda tonight, certainly one of the things that she will be working on with us is the reopening of some of these cases where these cops and other law, so-called people, have been involved in killing our people. We recently began to look at a documentary, and I'd ask Sister Tawanda if you saw this documentary yet, with Johnson. Man, that thing is explosive. To have his organs be gone? Anyway, let's bring in Sister Tawanda. And let's talk more about this. And family, again, We can't just have these conversations. There's got to be some plans of action. But we charge Genocide 21. As we proceed for the summer, we'll be doing community inquests, kinds of town hall meetings or whatever, where the people, the masses of our people, will not only have teach-ins and speak-outs, but you'll be able to document the various different types of atrocities that folks have experienced that you want to share and have on record. That's the kind of stuff that we're doing with the We Trust Genocide 21. So, without further ado, let's bring in our sister Tawanda Jones. Brother Mike says, warrior woman, Tawanda Jones. Hey, sis.
Hey, sis. How are you?
I'm wonderful, wonderful. I mean, it's cold as all get out in this city, but other than that, it's all good.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What's going on there in B-more?
What's not? Well, first of all, before I get started on what's going on and what's not, I just want to pretty much let Dr. Garvey know that I will definitely be sharing that petition with the West Coalition and many folks as I can to definitely push. So I'm right over there.
That's right. I know that's right, sis. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I forgot to mention also to folks that are, you know, that are church members. I mean, a lot of folks are, you know, go to churches. They could also matriculate that information to, you know, the members of their church. You know, most churches got 200, 300 or so members. You know, to just shoot them that text or shoot them that email, family. Again, these are things that can be easily done and definitely needs to be done. So just wanted to put that little sidebar out there as well. All right, sis, so tell us again what's going on. What is this? Not this week coming in, but this week past. Is that 445?
Yep, you got that right.
All right, all right.
Absolutely. Yep. It's been a long time, but it's still a long road to go. And,
absolutely.
You know, I'm just like real, I'm just real disgusted because even when injustices happen anywhere, you know, it affects us everywhere. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, and just literally looking at, like, you know, this month is being Black History Month, you know, which they give us the shortest month ever. But we celebrate our people all year round. So that month literally don't mean anything. But just, you know, everybody just talking about it and dealing with it in the school system. And I get to tweak my curriculum in my classroom. You know, it's just amazing. So, but I'm just looking at, like, what happened on February the 2nd, 2022, and if you look at those numbers numerically, you'll see 20222.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, that number was real symbolic and deep to me when I woke up. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is like, what's going to happen today? That's what my spirit just kept on saying, something is going to happen. And I was praying that something good was going to happen, but I knew something significant was going to happen on that day. You know, God just prepared my spirit, but I didn't know exactly what. And long story short, you know, another Black man was murdered in his house in the same form and fashion, but to me even worse than what happened to Breonna Taylor. Literally, you go in an apartment building on a no-knock warrant or what have you.
Oh, yeah.
With the kids.
Yep.
And you execute a 22-year-old in 2022. And then, but we got to look at, you know, not only what happened to Amir Lockett, we got to look at where did it happen at. You know, it literally happened right there where George Floyd was murdered, where the world watched, where the world, keep in mind, where the world watched another brother scream for his dead mother. You know, we watched his soul leave his body, you know what I mean, to be with the Lord. We watched that while we're in this pandemic. You get what I'm saying? Forced to do nothing else but look at the internet and things of that nature. But I just think it's ironic, pretty much, when I had a war correspondent, as Mike would call me,
right,
war correspondent, Mr. Mel Reeves. He, when I say he had everything, not only in that town, Minneapolis, but literally everywhere, but that was his town. That's where he breathed sleep corruption. You get what I'm saying? And literally, our brother died this year of COVID. Like, right. And then the saddest part, when he was on his deathbed, he was thinking about victims of police brutality. So that's why I say the system timing is immaculate. We have to keep up and keep on their heels and watch what they're doing to our people, especially when leaders are just dying of sickness. As soon as you go in the hospital, you know, you have to sometimes, like, to me, my question is, what are they putting in the machines? Like, I mean, I know COVID is real because I had it. I was sick, you know, and I still kind of feel a little sickness now, even though I had it literally, like, almost 40 days ago, but I still feel a little bit affected. But thank God it didn't wipe me out. Thank God I didn't go in the hospital, because God knows what they would have put inside of me. You get what I'm saying? We got to really watch that. And I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but just looking at Mel Reeves, you know, being a big warrior king that he was, I know he looking down like, oh my God. And then the fact that when I had him on the West Wing, he says, in his last speech on the West Wednesday, he was talking about how they will kill a Negro. You know, they go up to your house and kill you. He said they'll say that you died from everything, for what they did to you. He said they'll even say you died from COVID. Those were his words. Like, really? And then now they say he died from COVID? I'm looking at Lottie, Dottie, and everybody. But as far as, you know, in Baltimore, it's just sad and sickening, because I went today, you know, I told you like a year ago, my cousin Tavon Anderson was murdered literally on a West Wednesday morning, and then literally on the night that I was on the news, and we were talking about all the corruption in the city, and we were talking about one officer that played a crucial role out of the 17 officers that beat an unarmed man, which was my brother Tyron West. But we were talking about Officer Ruiz being a part of the Gun Trace Task Force, an elite, corrupt Gun Trace Task Force that was robbing alleged so-called drug dealers, planting drugs on people, raping, robbing, and killing them. And literally, he played a big part, because he was the first one, him and his partner, Killer Chapman, to pull over an unarmed man and start executing my brother, and then had 15 others come follow up and carry the execution out. You get what I'm saying? But literally, today is my cousin Tavon's birthday, and not only is it his birthday, unfortunately, it's my sister Angela Fleming's, her brother Timothy Fleming's, was executed again in his home last year, and they still just don't even have an autopsy report. Like, it's going on a year. They don't even have an autopsy report. That's just how dirty Baltimore City is. They talk about cleaning up the medical examiners. They ain't doing nothing, sis. They ain't doing nothing, but the corruption is really real, and it's getting realer. But literally, Timothy Fleming's family right now is still waiting for an autopsy report of what happened to their loved one. They ain't getting no answers. Nobody's coming to them. Unfortunately, his children, Timothy Fleming's children, you know, was in the house when he got murdered, and they're still in that damn house. They're still in the house, and it's just sad and disgusting. So I just wanted to throw that out, but now we got, you know, our state's attorney in the spotlight, you know, which she should be. I know a lot of people look at her as a shero, but nah, not me. That's a whole nother story and topic. But, you know, but then looking and giving to at who, you know, they're probably trying to push back in the chair. We got to be careful about that, because I feel like, as I remember one time they mentioned in small black and white letters that if for some reason she was to be, you know, taken out of office or whatever, they was going to put Greg Bernstein, the biggest known racist piece of crap, back in office. And I said, over my dead body. And if Greg Bernstein is listening right now, again, we rant you out, we'll run you out again. Whoever ain't doing their job gotta go. And that's exactly why Poopy Hall is still shut down. You know, City Hall is what I'm referring to. City Hall that makes decisions, you know, for everybody in my community. We got homeless people out there on the street dying. The homicide rate is off the hook here. And we literally a month and a couple days into the new year. You get what I'm saying? Like, This is ridiculous. Yeah. It's unacceptable. And it's getting worse because we have the still missing girls here. They'll say something about a missing teenager every 2 days and you hear nothing else. You don't hear if they ever found the child or anything. You just hear about them being missing and nothing else. And then they don't even tell you the day that they actually go missing. They wait like they let 48 to sometimes 60 hours go past before they broadcast the face of a black missing girl. You know, so we got to pay attention to all of the corruption. It is truly real, sis, and it's heartbreaking. It really is. It really is.
Wow.
Yep.
So on another note, sis, I have to ask you about this because I can't wait to hear your opinion. You know, we talked last week or so about, you know, the documentary that's recently released on our brother Kendrick Johnson. And a day ago, an article came out, and I'm going to share this with you and Sister Keisha very shortly. I'm going to send it to you. And this came out from the Atlanta Journal, right?
Okay.
I'm just going to read
a
little bit of it briefly because, you know, certain things at some point becomes, like, not just annoying, but anyway, it says, a South Georgia sheriff is putting up a $500,000 reward of his own cash. Information leading to the for information leading to the conviction of anyone who killed Kendra Johnson, the high school student found dead inside a rolled up wrestling mat. He might as well offer $5 million or even $5 billion. Because it doesn't matter. He'll never have to pay. There was no murder here. Last week, Niles County Sheriff Ashley Polk released a finding saying there was no homicide, no cover-up, no conspiracy in the January 2013 death of the teen. It was simply a tragic and bizarre accident.
Wow. Wow, that
came
my
out
whole mind.
Yesterday. I know.
Are you
came out
me?
Yesterday.
That, but the hypocrisy, like the foolishness, like, oh, my God, the blatant disrespect is like, this is like, of like, so literally he rolled himself up in a mat, and I guess the tightness of the mat pushed all his organs out. And I guess whoever just came and collected them, okay. We supposed to be stupid. And it's utterly ridiculous, utterly a smack in the face. But, again, I always say that nobody's going to come and save us. We have to save our own selves.
That's right.
You know, we keep taking the trash that they give us. And their answer is always, if you listen to all the cases, it's repeated, you know, pretty much the same exact thing with a different victim name. They always try to offer the family hush money to send them away. And in their mind, I remember, I'll never forget, our former mayor, Catherine Pugh, looked me in my face when we were having a meeting, and I was trying to get her to open up, you know, see what she could do in pursuing and reopening my brother's case. And she literally said to me, you know, oh, at first, she acted like she didn't remember me, but she knew who I was because she came to West Wednesday before she got in the office begging for my votes and all my West Wednesday supporters and was saying how she'd get on everybody $15 an hour, you know, for minimum wages, and literally how she would reopen my brother's case because that was wrong what they did to him. And she commended me for being such a strong fighter. As soon as this lady got into office, this black lady got into office, she literally forgot who I was. When my brother JC asked her about Tyrone West when he was at an important event that he was hosting and she showed up, she said, who is Tyrone West? Who's Tawanda Jones? It literally, I went out
the
room. But my point is, when we were studying at Poopy Hall, which is City Hall, a.k.a. City Hall, we're sitting there, and she called herself with this wonderful brunch, all the steak, eggs, and they even had some grits and everything. Like, I would have ate if I wasn't sitting with snakes. I'd rather eat crumbs with bums than to eat steaks with snakes. So let's be crystal clear. So I push my plate to the side, and that's what I say. Oh, you're not going to eat, Mr. Juan? Oh, no, I'm good. Like I said, I'd rather eat crumbs with bombs than steaks with snakes, so I'm good. I don't want none of this. But long story short, then she started to recall who I was, and then she started to remember my brother a little bit. She said, oh, yeah, you guys did get just. I said, when I left this place, I left Earth, and I'm reborn again. I know I'm a reborn Christian, but what the hell I missed? You know what I'm saying? Like, did my soul leave my body? When we get justice? Where was I at? She was like, I signed off on $1 million that your family received. When I say I pulled out a picture of where they hacked up my brother's body that she didn't even know I had, and I made her vomit, almost vomit in her mouth. And I said, dude, this looks like accountability. And I said, and for your information, that ain't no accountability. And I took my name off it. So what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Shame on you. But like I said, any and everybody that did the crushing, the funny part about it is, you know, that when you reap what you sow. You get what I'm saying? So when you start treating people like trash and doing all type of disrespect and, you know, you get caught up in this dirty system, you actually get caught up in this dirty system. Each and every last one of them that met with me, laughed in my family face, did all type of stuff. All I'm in jail or went to jail. Like, it's just, it's real. It's horrible. But, you know, I don't wish that on anyone. But, I mean, come on now. You know, if you do things, do it with love, do it with respect, and do it with integrity. And we have lost and walked away from all of that. And it's utterly ridiculous.
Right, right.
And I don't know what's, but I feel like now, sis, I'm glad I'm talking to you, I feel like they're really distracting us in Baltimore, because what I'm seeing is going on is a lot of house fires, and now they're talking about, and unfortunately I told you last week or a couple weeks ago, some firefighters got caught in a house fire.
Yes, yeah, I saw that.
And three perished and one survived. But I just feel like, the way I feel like how dirty this system is, they have so many dirty tricks, and they send people to be their flunkies. And I'm praying that my inner gut is not right, that they sent them firefighters in there and with no return. Like, they, you know, you send somebody on a one-way ticket, but they thinking they got a round trip, but you only paid one way, and they stuck it. You know they ain't coming back. You get what I'm saying? My gut, like, my gut has been leading me for 9 years. My gut, my spirit said, you know what? They sent them up. They set them up. They sent them in an abandominium that they knew. But get this, and I want you, because I don't want people to think, oh, is she crazy? Is her guest crazy right now? She's woo. No, I'm not crazy. I want everybody that's listening to me, listen crystal clear. That same house that they sent those poor firefighters in, and I'm praying for their families and praying for their souls and everything. Literally that same exact house caught on fire in 2015 with things collapsing and everything. So they knew the condition. It ain't like this was the first time that abandoned house, and it was abandoned in 2015 when it burnt. You get what I'm saying? So why would you send them back in there for what? Like, it makes no sense. Make it make sense to me. If somebody can make it make sense to me, then I can roll whichever way the sense is going. But it makes no sense. But the only sense I can see is now they're starting to talk about, oh, well, what are we going to do about the abandoned buildings when we've been telling them for years, for decades, get these abandoned miniums out of the house, because a lot of, you know, people were going in the houses, getting high. They was finding dead bodies, all type of stuff. Little girls were getting raped, pulled in these abandoned miniums and all that. They ain't think about none of our people. You get what I'm saying? But now all of a sudden, they want to say, you know what, we need to think about abandoned miniums. I'm like, oh, yeah, something there. And then when you start thinking about looking into it real deep, then it goes for the justification. You got to look and be clear for all that. That's why they're letting all the murders happen in our city, because guess what? And they probably doing the damn murders, because this ain't all us. And once they get everybody out, wipe them out either through bullets, through body bags, or move you out, you get what I'm saying? Then they're going to rebuild, rethink America. Yep. That's what they're doing right now. Let's get crystal clear. Crystal clear. And then they're doing something to me that's even extra weird, because, you know, Baltimore had something called the Block, and anybody that came to Baltimore know that's where all the strip clubs at, and they always say the creeps and the freaks come out at night and all this, that, and the third. So, but Baltimore Street, the Block, been there forever. You get what I'm saying? Been there forever. Yeah. But now, all of a sudden, they're trying to push them more actively now, because, you know, legislation is in, and they're pushing different laws, but they're actually trying to push a law to actually shut Baltimore Block down at 10 o'clock. Like, really? That's odd. And they're saying, and when we're asking as constituents, why, which to me, let's be clear, I have no desire to go on the Block. I'm sorry, no desire, but I still want to know what's going on in our communities. Like, because you got to ask yourself this. Mind you, they've been building, they had been stopped and blocked us from going through a certain part of our neighborhood. Remember I told you they was building some type of bridge or whatever. They've been working on this bridge now going on 4 years, but they said everything was supposed to have been up and running because they blocked some part of Hartford Road down that we couldn't even go through. We ain't been through this part. Certain the bottom part of Hartford Road we could not get and have access to because it's all been locked down for whatever they building right up on our eyes. But they told us, they told us, hey, we're going to have this bridge built for you guys in 3 years. It's going on for, bro. Way out bridge at? What y'all building? You get what I'm saying? What y'all doing? And ain't nobody questioning that. Like, I'm just over. But now they're saying that they're actually trying to get a bill to shut the Block down at 10 o'clock at night, but yet clubs right around the corner are still open to like 2 p.m., whatever time, but yet they're going to shut down the Block. Make it make sense. And they're talking about because of the homicides, but only one person got shot on the Block, and he didn't even die. Like, he wasn't even a homicide. But so you're shutting it down the Block for what? So these are the things that I just want people to look into, like what's going on in our community. And that's why, like, literally they're trying to divert us in the way they want us to go and think. But I'm looking at everything. So,
And you know what, Sister Tawanda, on that note, and also I think I see Brother Shaka's in queue, so we're going to get ready to go to the next segment. Also, Brother Ishmael and Baba Oduna, if you're in queue, you need to press 1 so that I can see you. But going back to Sister Tawanda for a moment, you know what I think, sis? That we are looking at, right before our eyes, social engineering. Social engineering. These people are doing trial runs to see if we are paying attention, to see what they can get away with. Because remember, they've been using a lot of that as the reason why they're doing A, B, N, or C. How they'll shut stuff down, and they got people buying into it based on, you know, well, it's COVID, it's safety, it's health, but also it's social engineering. It's a, if not actual Homeland Security or Patriot Act, it is to begin to see how to manipulate and maneuver how people come and go. This is what they're doing under the guise of COVID. This is what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And they showed us this. And see, this is why I'm telling folks now, if your so-called leaders or whatever you want to call them in your communities, if they don't have an emergency response or some other kind of plan of action that they're presenting in your community, I'm telling you right now, they're there to help destroy you. Because any group, organization that's supposed to be about social justice or helping our people or whatever are not trying to give information about emergency response and preparedness, crisis intervention, things of that nature. They're playing with you. Playing with you.
Absolutely.
In this day and age, they're playing with you. Okay? So we're going to now see who is who. Because we've been monitoring seriously here in Philly. These groups and organizations, they're giving out food, which is, you know, that's a good thing. People need food. But if something was to happen, what kind of reaction, what kind of preparedness, what kind of, you know, they keep us in this chaotic state of being and then want to give you some food to calm you down.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the truth. That is the truth.
Listen, I got to bring in my next guest, but here's the thing I want you to, very briefly, two things. One, we heard that they arrested the brother Mike with the mic. Yeah, the brother that did the wire. They said now that they've arrested four people in connection with his death. Now, I'm confused.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. That was real. Because one minute, and I got confused too, sis. Because when I heard it, first of all, they just tried to paint this brother. I was like, oh, he had an overdose.
Right.
And that was it. Just like how when DMX died, oh, he had an overdose. Like everybody,
right.
Everybody black and famous was just dying of an overdose. And now they're saying they got four suspects. And that's why I was scratching my head. Like, what the hell is going on? What's really good?
I know.
What's really good?
Really? And now, who do they usually, when do they usually come up with someone like, oh, we found the people that gave them the drugs?
Right, like
really?
That, right. I feel like, sis, I feel like I'm watching an episode of The Wire. I'm waiting for them to say, oh, he wasn't dead. We was playing with y'all. This the 2022 version of The Wire. That's what I'm waiting for. Because you got to be like, Hollywood couldn't make this stuff up. You're like, are you kidding me? Like, where they do that at? I feel like I'm watching Power. I'm waiting for the final episode that's on now. You know, but I ain't even got to watch that because I'm too busy watching this. The television, motion pictures. Like, this is really going on. Like, it's crazy, man. Yep. And they said fentanyl is it's killing us all, man. Fentanyl.
Yeah. And lastly, what that said, they claimed that it was laced in with heroin, and that's what caused it. It was laced in heroin. But look, y'all, y'all know what's going on, and if you don't know, you're going to know, because these people have now made it very clear that they are going to do everything possible to destroy us in every way that they possibly can. And so we can keep playing these games and thinking that, you know, we're just going to talk about this or just do that. Listen. All right. Good luck with that, y'all. All right, my sister Tawanda Jones, again, let folks know about West Wednesday. How can they tune in? And again, we're coming up on the 446th week, family. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, Sister Tawanda has, for 445 weeks, every single week, held West Wednesday. And up until COVID, it was in the street every week in regards to her brother's murder and other murders and atrocities that are happening in our city. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I don't know many people could say that. That somebody is out in the street every single week for over 450 weeks. I don't know anybody could say that. And since COVID, they've been doing it virtually. But I'm saying, y'all show me where that kind of consistency has been, really. Because this is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about. We can do all the conferences and all of that all day and night. If we're not getting out here in these streets or at least connecting to people that are, guess what? You're hallucinating.
Really. You got that right.
You're hallucinating.
You got that right.
All right.
So, Sister Twana,
real quick,
go ahead. No, I want to say real quick because my sister had sent me something on what we were talking about, and she said pretty much, you know, I guess while they was investigating, they saw photos of him on the street when he purchased the drugs, and you know, was laced with fentanyl, and they say that he was suffering with depression, which we all are.
Black folks always depressed. Anyway,
we born in the womb depressed. We really do. But anyway, yeah, I just wanted to share that with y'all.
Moving right along. Okay. All right, sis. Love you much. Thank you much.
Love you more.
And we'll definitely, you know, we'll be talking later on this week about something anyway. So.
Absolutely. All right. And I'll be tuning in. Stay on the list.
All right, sis. Good thanks. All right, family. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with our brother, Minister Ishmael. Again, see, there's some folk in Philly, I don't care when I call or how I call, they respond in some kind of way. But not only that, they have a history of doing the work that we've been talking about. Of course, the Honorable Marcus Garvey. You know, needless to say, we have to now connect those black dots. So, again, we're going to talk to our minister, Ishmael Islam. And, again, he's the minister for the Lost Foundation here in Philadelphia. And we're going to also talk with our brother, Shaka Barak, in Chicago. And he, of course, is the director of the Marcus Garvey Institute. We're going to talk about COINTELPRO, but also the influence of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and perhaps even a little more importantly in terms of, you know, action, what we're going to do, y'all? How do we take these lessons of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? How do we take the lessons and apply them today? What's the plan? What are the real actions? And what are we going to do about treason in our communities? Because, again, what happened to the Honorable Marcus Garvey? And we have Brother Shaka to fill us in a little more on that. They got infiltrated. Infiltrated. They wanted to set him up, with, as Dr. Garvey mentioned, by, you know, seeing if he had some promiscuity or to see if he was doing something with money. And, look, I bear witness to all that. See, I learned. I learned from those who came before me. That's why I didn't do certain things. But I digress. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a half a minute. Stay right there. And you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Fillet. And, yes, I do have an honorary doctor's degree. And I'm going to begin to assert that a bit more as we proceed in dealing with spirituality, bringing it to a greater height in the 21st century, and certainly as we move forward towards liberation, real irreversible liberation. Anyway, we're going to go back to our live line, and as I mentioned earlier, we are going to talk with our brother, Minister Ishmael Islam, representing the Lost Foundation of Islam, and of course, we're going to talk with our brother, Shaka Barak, who is the director of the Marcus Garvey Institute in Chicago. Okay, and we still have Sister Tawanda with us, too. So, Sister, if you want to chime in as we're talking, then feel free to do so. Again, before we open up the lines with our brothers, just want to, again, give a quick shout-out to Sister Keisha. Glad you saw that article, Sister Keisha. Man, oh, man. And also those who are listening online, we thank you for tuning in. And remind y'all that in a few months, actually in April, we will have been doing this program for 13 straight years, independent. And lastly with that, we had a meeting today, and we are getting ready to bring forward to you the Black Whirlwind News. It'll be both on YouTube, and we'll literally be distributing them here in Philadelphia, you know, hands-on, okay? We'll tell you more about that later. All right, moving right along. Let's go to our live line. And joining us now is our brother Ishmael, Minister Ishmael. We're going to open up his line. And also, we're going to bring in our brother Shaka Barak from the Marcus Garvey Institute. Hey, brothers, how y'all do tonight? How y'all be?
Hey, sister, how you doing?
All right, all right. Brother Shaka, are you there? Mr. Ishmael, you're going to have to come off of speaker because we're getting feedback.
I'm actually on my earphones. You want me to take it off?
Okay, yeah, you're going to have to come off them because we're getting a whole bunch of feedback on that. Okay, thank you. And Brother Shaka, are you there? Okay, I thought Brother Shaka was there. I'm not hearing him, though. Okay, Mr. Ishmael, I'm still getting... No, that sounds good now. I think we got you now.
Yep, I think we got you now.
Still getting feedback.
Well, I'm off my ear. That's not me. Okay, so I'm going to mute out this other one.
Okay, I thought that was Brother Shaka, but for some reason he did not respond, so I'll try back again. So, okay, Mr. Ishmael, how are you this evening?
I'm well, my sister, enjoying your program very much so.
I know that's right. Yeah,
You always bring power to the people. Yeah, you always bring power to the people.
Ah, Ashe, indeed. All right.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Dr.
Marcus, Dr. Garvey,
Julius.
He gave some profound information about his childhood and his family and his father. I really enjoyed that.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it's such a blessing, you know, to be able to hear directly. I mean, we read things, you know, and we see movies or we see DVDs or whatever. But to hear, you know, from someone that literally, I mean, he was there. I mean, even though he was a child, but still, you know, that's a direct kind of information. So we are very appreciative of that. Mr. Ishmael, what are your thoughts about COINTELPRO?
From what I understand from my research, I do. Well, before I do that, let me give honor to our Savior, if you will permit me to say that, who came from the East, Master Farad Muhammad, because this is the month in which we celebrate his birthday, and he was the teacher of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. So let me give honor and thanks for his coming. And, of course, we always give thanks for the memory of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. The COINTEL program, we have been taught that inside of the program, the whole purview of J. Edgar Hoover was to prevent the rise of the Black Messiah. We need to understand that he was coming from a spiritual view, but he was looking at a political person who was to galvanize the masses of our people. I don't know how many of our people actually zoomed in on that, but that's a very important piece in the COINTEL program, that he looked at various leaders during that time, and he made a view that he would say, well, this one may be too old. He looked at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He looked at Martin Luther King. He looked at Freddie. And, you know, you can look at these persons and see from the papers that you spoke about that were found, you could see who they were looking at, and they were looking at what? Someone who would galvanize us in unity politically.
Right. That's right.
And he termed that person a Messiah amongst our people. So that's very interesting from our view as the Lost Foundation of Islam. And from the view of what we're striving to do politically in the international world, where you well know that's where we put our hands in the fight.
Yes, that's right.
For self-determination and human rights. My leader and teacher today is the most honorable Silas Muhammad. You know well of him. He's been headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia for quite some time. So that's where we fight at. But to your question, Mm-hmm. It is COINTELPRO was pointed at the galvanizing of the unity of our mm-hmm. community by a political figure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Minister Israel. I'm going to bring in, it looks like our brother Shaka's back with us. Hopefully we will not have that interference. Let's see. Okay. Greetings, Brother Shaka.
Greetings, Empress Chi.
Oh, yep. We got you. All right. Good thanks. How's my brother?
All right. First of all, let me say happy African Heritage Month to all of our brothers and sisters. Let me also say that history is very important because we have a history where there has been so many attempts to deny our significance in the history of the world, the history of all the civilizations of the world. So our history ought to be utilized to undo the centuries of denying the cultural and the history of Africa to justify colonialism, conquest, enslavement, mm-hmm. plunder, and genocide. Mm-hmm. I also mm-hmm. want to say to our sister that spoke, enjoyed listening to you. I heard your passion. Keep up the mm-hmm. good work. I want mm-hmm. to say that I certainly support the exoneration effort by the son of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Dr. Julius Winston Garvey, to get the U.S. President Joseph Biden to pardon Marcus Garvey and mm-hmm. to get over 100,000 signatures. My support for this effort is not just verbal, but of course, as you see, that I had arranged for him to be on the mm-hmm. New Day Resurrection and Liberation Radio, and I've also arranged for him to be on the Sankofa Revolutionary radio station and the Progressive Minds radio station and in-band conference call so that we can get the word out and get the support for this great effort. Now, mm-hmm. in terms of your question about COINTELPRO, we say that when J. Edgar Hoover cut his tooth on the UNIA and the Honorable Marcus Garvey, he saw the Messiah. He saw Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and he didn't mm. want to have another successful Messiah. So COINTELPRO was to prevent that from happening. It was also an effort to prevent the connection of the African at home on the continent and the African abroad. There's always mm-hmm. been an attempt to play the game of divide and conquer to keep us separated from each other. Now, in particular, we're concerned about the petition drive, and we need to just go back a little bit and reflect on what happened, what injustice occurred, because the theme is justice for Garvey. But before I deal with that, I want to also say to the Muslims who are honoring Master Fuad Muhammad, the founder of the Nation of Islam, and those who follow Salas Muhammad. I met him, fell in love with the brother and the work that he was doing. So I just want my brother Muhammad to know we share a friend in Salas Muhammad. So, my brothers and sisters, when we think in terms of this injustice that the son is talking about, we're talking about the attack on the Honorable Marcus Garvey was an attack on the 8,000 Africans in America who were lynched across this country. It is an attack on the 50 million who died, who lost their lives during the 400 years of the transatlantic slave trade. When we say an attack on Marcus Garvey, it is the 6 million members of the UNIA who were represented at that time that were attacked. But not only were they attacked, but because of this treachery of what we call war criminals, some of us had loved ones, grandparents, and great-grandparents who lost their fortunes that they invested in the Black Star Line Steamship Corporation because the FBI sent infiltrators and sent saboteurs inside of the UNIA. And then when they did a crime against the UNIA and the Alma Mater Garvey, they turned their back. Many of them lost money in the Universal grocery stores, the Universal restaurants, the millinery stores, the baby doll factories, the clothing factory, a Phyllis Wheatley hotel, the Booker T. Washington University, the Negro World newspaper. So because of this sabotage, this theft, these lies and cheating by these war criminals, some UNIA members even came up dead because of the work of these war criminals. They tried to assassinate Marcus Garvey, as his son had said earlier. Now, inside of the courts, this is where the treachery really took place, because they had a prosecutor by the name of Maxwell Maddox who waited and held up the trial so that he could make sure he would have a judge that would be a part of a rival organization. And so normally you would, if you were a lawyer, a judge that was a part of a rival organization to the person that's being tried, you would remove yourself from being over that trial. And so here were people who the judge showed unfairness and did nothing to safeguard the rights of society. That's us, by denying every plea Marcus Garvey made and every motion he made for consideration. He denied it. But when the prosecutor had done something wrong, he turned away. He ignored it. Marcus Garvey was persecuted in that courtroom. There were many attempts to ridicule him, use sarcasm, be unkindly to him, reprimand him. And when remarks were made by people in the courtroom that the judge should have prevented, like people just running up to the judge, having a little conversation and looking at Marcus Garvey and smiling like they had did something deceptive. The judge, again, turned a deaf ear to what was happening to the Honorable Marcus Garvey. Only the enemies, members of the NAACP at that time, members of rival organizations, were allowed in the courtroom. So everybody in the courtroom were sympathetic to the court. And not to the Honorable Marcus Garvey. Now, my mentor, the Honorable Charles L. James, was able to get inside of the courtroom, and he could see for himself how they were just walking and parading around trying to humiliate the Honorable Marcus Garvey. But people don't know that you could not humiliate the Honorable Marcus Garvey. You could not disappoint the Honorable Marcus Garvey. He was so prepared. He said leadership means pain. It means blood. It means death. So he was so prepared to lead us until even inside of that court or inside of a jail or the grave itself would not deter the Honorable Marcus Garvey from continuing to support our race and doing the best that he could till the very end of his life. He never was disappointed. And lastly, the judge was so pleased with the verdict of guilty that he excused the jury from duty for a number of years. So, brothers and sisters, when we revisit what actually happened and we see the injustice that took place, we're going to need some of our African-centered lawyers to take a close look at the injustice that took place and ask the world's opinion, if he had been white, would they have allowed that to happen? Had he been of another ethnic group, would they, the judge and the prosecutor, have gotten away with that? If he had been white, could the district attorney have sent somebody to assassinate him to come to the man's residence and say, the district attorney sent me to get you? And then, yeah, he was killed so that the secret wouldn't get out, because it wasn't a secret because he announced it. But had he been white, would that have happened? So as we think in terms of genocide, yes, it doesn't always occur because of people are killed outright. Sometimes their livelihood is destroyed. Sometimes the food that they eat is destroyed. Sometimes other kinds of calamities are added into the people's life that causes the genocide to take place. Slow death is death nonetheless. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Brother Shaka. And you made an excellent point And that is why we are really taking the effort to educate our people about what genocide is. It's not just, you know, what people seen from 1948 or whatever with the gas chambers or what have you, with the so-called Jews. There are many forms now. That's why for our We Charge Genocide 21, we point out social engineering, eugenics in the 21st century. But yes, definitely. Thank you, Brother Shaka. Going back to Minister Ismael. Minister Ismael, certainly you, the Lost Foundation, are also familiar with Taj or agents sent into the organizations. Of course, you know, having the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we've read, you know, some of the things or have heard some of the things that have been mentioned in the past, and certainly, you know, I'm sure you have seen or, you know of some things in the more recent time, because it seems that that goes with the territory. Now, you know, with the Honorable Marcus Garvey, certainly, you know, we're talking about 100 years ago. So we know that their level of sophistication and other forms of capability is now, you know, certainly much more because things, you know, advance as time goes on, good, bad, or indifferent. So with that, Minister, what do you think today, what do you think are some of the both types of COINTELPRO, if it's not called that today, but what are some of the types of COINTELPRO that are in our midst today? And with that said, what can we now do, what should we do to begin to fight back to a greater extent? We're seeing in our communities all over the country how there's sellouts, how we're dealing with sheeple. Our people have become sheeple. We're dealing with these Pied Pipers who are, you know, jumping in front of the cameras a lot of times. It is not the camera. They're still just doing all kinds of bootlicking and other kinds of things in our community. Yes, I said it because I can. But the point is, you know, again, these 501 things, which, again, just for a point of clarity, I'm not saying don't get it, but if that's all you're doing, then anyway. So what are some of the things that we can do, you know, today to counter what is presently happening in our communities as a result of COINTELPRO or whatever name we want to call it now? And with that said, again, how can we be more supportive? Of course, with the exoneration of Diablo Marcus Garvey, we've got instructions, y'all. We've got instructions, and it's so simple, so easy. But also there's the issue of our political prisoners, who definitely in this day and time were direct victims of COINTELPRO. Some of their names, I've read some of Mumia's files when they started documenting him when he was 14 years of age, you see. So, you know, again, what do we do to address the crimes against them now? Many being incarcerated for 40 years or more. And again, as a community, as a people, how can we fight back in general? What we know the enemy is going to always do. Again, be it called COINTELPRO or Black Identity, Black Extremist Identity, or whatever name they come up with. The practices are still the same.
Well, let me give you some suggestions from a very minute frame of mind. We must strengthen the families. First thing you need to do is turn off that ignorant box. Get your children. Did you hear how educated that brother was about Marcus Garvey's information?
Yes. Yeah,
that is because he is well read and learned, and I commend him for that. The average person in our family probably does not even own a book, let alone any information on some of our heroes and sheroes, because we're being educated and manipulated by the ignorant box in the home. Our music has been reduced to this. It's just blasphemy for what we say about our women and what we believe wealth is and how we're supposed to achieve wealth. And all these things are given to us by the oppressor. He is educating us through his terminologies. The Honorable Marcus Garvey began to educate the people through means of knowledge, as well as training them to learn to seek knowledge both home and abroad. We have gotten away from that. So it's easy for a person to stand before you and say he or she is your leader because they know you're ignorant. They know that you do not study. They know that you have no control of your community. They know that you have no control of the fools that enter your community, controlling your children today. Look at Philadelphia. Look at our murder rate. Look at the youth.
Yes.
Who is controlling our youth? Who is bringing weapons into our environment that our youth, making them accessible, that our youth can get there? Why is life so devalued in our communities? Because we have not taken control of our homes. Any basic thing in the community is family. From the family, community grows. From community, you get a nation. When we take control of our homes and our children, of our block, our community, then we can come together as a unit in unity as a nation. We can't blame everything on the enemy. We have to take a look at self. You know what I'm saying? We have to really start by re-educating ourselves and our children. That's what the Most Honorable Marcus Garvey was doing, Noble Drew Ali was doing, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was doing, and that's what Silas Muhammad is advocating today. So we can start looking better when we educate ourselves and train ourselves down to what is a leader? What defines a leader? Are we leaders in our home? Are we leaders of our children? Are we leaders of our block? Are we leaders of our community? See, we got to start looking at self, sister. That's my opinion. The only way you can correct these ills now is to deal with self. Once we start dealing with self, you heard how sister, that pain was coming from sister. That pain, when you're talking about a block, why is those clubs open up in Baltimore, degrading our women, men advocating that degradation? Why are we allowing that? That's us. We can't expect the oppressor to go fix our problem. We got to fix it ourselves. See, when we start looking at self and start, I guess you would say, policing self and policing home, we might be able now to see who are the true leaders and who are for us, because we can see ourselves. That's my opinion. You know what I mean? I'm just one person. But I'm telling you that we need to fix the problems ourselves first. Then we can look out. See, it's no longer just the oppressor. We are oppressing ourselves. We're allowing our children to do this. We're allowing this to go on. We're allowing our children to use these narcotics because many of us are addicted to these narcotics ourselves. Many of us are alcoholics. Many of us are not living right. And who are their best examples? Those who they live around and who are they around. So we got to straighten up self first.
All right. All right. Thank you, Minister Ishmael. Okay, Lost Foundation in the house. All right, family, it looks like we have with us finally Baba Oduna. Again, when you talk about educator, historian, and a Garveyite, he's the elder for this conversation for tonight. Outside of Dr. Garvey, he was really the elder, but now we have another elder in this conversation or with us for this conversation. Baba Oduna, I need you to press one, though, if you would, please, because I got a couple. I'm almost sure one of these is your numbers, but I'm not sure which one. So I need you to press one. But also, before we bring in Baba Oduna, I want to just kind of respond a little bit to what Brother Ishmael just said and just say this, that as a prerequisite, or if not prerequisite, as a part of lending to the process that you just mentioned, what MWM is now doing is providing some tools. Because what we now know is that some of us get it or have gotten it or understand it or whatever. Many of our people don't. And so we want to make sure that we are now providing some of the tools to help our people to go through some of these transitions. Now, needless to say, it's been done before. We know that. We've talked about several examples. But in this day and age, we're not seeing to the extent, and like Brother Ishmael said, our people are being bombarded. Between Facebook, Hook Crook, and all this other stuff, our people are so bombarded. So with that said, MWM is launching its campaign for Philly to start with, where we obtain some of these abandoned buildings. There's no reason why abandoned buildings should be sitting in our communities and we not do something with those buildings. So we're going after buildings now. And with that, it'll enable us to provide education, to provide spiritual development, to provide health kinds of incentives and so forth in our community ourselves. So now we're saying we have to show forms of action in this day and age in order to reach our people where they are. We have to figure out how to do that. So again, we want to see who in Philly is going to support that and throughout the country. MWM is doing something that we feel is pretty not only groundbreaking, but definitely a demonstration of self-determination in the 21st century, because we're talking about doing this independent. But also to begin to demand that this government begin to deal with reparatory justice. So we're not asking and begging and all of that stuff or trying to sign on the little crooked line. We're saying reparatory justice is a must. Other cities have begun to enact it, Illinois, and I think it's Evanston that has at least begun something to address the issue of reparations or what we call reparatory justice, because ours is a process, and there are steps to that. And here's a very good step of not only goodwill, but of solution orientation, where some of these properties that's owned by the city or the state or the federal government that's been sitting for 20, some 30 years, they should be returned to the community. So I just want to give you that as a sidebar, because that's what we're doing here in Philly, and we have seven other cities that we're looking at doing that within the next year as a part of our 25-year anniversary and what we call the Divine Resurrection. At any rate, okay, I see Baba Oduna, and we're going to bring him in now. Family, meet one of our elders, advisors, and just an outright good Baba. Want everyone to meet Professor Baba T.A. Oduna. He, of course, is based in Washington, D.C. Again, he is a historian, an educator, and a Garveyite, y'all, okay, and an agriculturist, too. But anyway, hey, Baba, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, well, well. They're having this young man to run so fast, but all is well. It's always in our standard to give all direction and all praises to the Almighty Creator of all the worlds, and Queen Phi, and as you have stated earlier, Dr. Julius Winston Garvey, who was on earlier, brother Shaka Barak, and Minister Israel of the Lost Found Nation of Islam. And we thank Almighty God for our parents, and we thank Almighty God. I, in particular, thank Almighty God, being a younger child in a family of three, that our parents did not abort us, because I would not be able to be on this conversation this year. I would just like to say, giving all thankfulness of those who have gone before, as what was stated as a matter of protocol, that the Universal Negro Improvement Association is a social, friendly, humanitarian, charitable, and expansive society, and was created for the Negro people of the world. And to be succinct, that the motto of the organization is one God, one aim, one destiny. Therefore, let justice be done to all mankind, for when the strong oppresses the weak, confusion and discontent will ever mark the path of man, but with love and faith and charity toward all, the reign of peace and plenty will be heralded into the world, and the generations shall be called blessed. I could go through the aims and the objects, but we need to get right to the what we call the watermelon, the green beans, corn. Ah, yes, yes, yes. And what it is that's today. We need to look at our own internal development, and we need to look at what is the challenges. Number one thing, as it was stated before, when you consider yourself an interim government or a nation, you have to have a plebiscite.
That's right.
And you have to have a plebiscite. And you cannot have a plebiscite over a weekend, no matter wonderful that it sounds, no matter how glorious the paperwork may look and be. We know that at the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community League of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and anyone who knows this young brother who is sharing here, that for us to be remiss, I do not say that Amy Ashwood Garvey was, like some people say, almost like saying she did not exist. I don't go as far to say that she was a co-founder, but what I do say is that she was in the mix at the time of the birth of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Imperial League, and that was shifted. And we know that that was sometime around the time of July the 20th in 1914, after the arrival of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey from the European peninsula called London, after he had worked with a number of people, and he worked with the Honorable Deuce Muhammad Ali. And sometimes when people talk about the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and Deuce Muhammad and other people, that Deuce Muhammad Ali taught Marcus Garvey this and taught Marcus Garvey that, and they'll go, and especially in the area of journalism, we know that there was a watchman earlier on in Jamaica, though it didn't last as long as some people purport that it lasted. We know that when he traveled through Central and South America because of the nature of the people who were there were African people. He had La Princesa, and he had La Nación, which were Spanish-speaking papers for the Spanish-speaking people in that part of the world. And if we do some simple mathematics, Portuguese and Spanish, the largest number of African and African descendants who spoke languages in the Western Hemisphere happened to have been the Spanish-Portuguese family, though that's not important. What's important is the plebiscite. The plebiscite. Mm-hmm. Plebiscite didn't just start in the year of 1920. I hear us, we put so much weight on 1920 and at the International Convention, August 1 through August 30th, and delegations from 4 to 5 different continents speaking the languages that they brought to a convention for an entire 30 days. But what was important was that they met for 30 days. The people came from Central and South America. The people came from Cuba. The people came from Johannesburg. The people came from Cape Town. South Africa. People came from West Africa. There was a delegation that came from Abyssinia. And we know that Abyssinia had been recently in 1896 who had a major step forward for African descendants around the world for the military defeat of those monstrosity Italians by not only Menelik the Second, but Tatu and those various Africans in that part of the world laid aside to a greater degree their internal differences and took care of those Italians. And in a similar way that our people in between 1896 and 1804 took care of the French, the names of those people, Nanny, the woman who fought with Toussaint Louverture, because we have to talk about the internal battles and we have to talk about the external battles and how our people, I fly the red, black, and green flag, but I also fly the Haitian flag because the idea of being an independent, freedom-loving people going forward here and around the world, Haiti struck the anvil. But we have
so
to
Baba.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt because we are, as you know, we were trying to get you on earlier, and we are going to run out of time now. So what I'd like to do is, family, those of you who are listening on Internet, you need to call in to the podcast because your Internet stream is going to be disconnected in about 2 minutes. So you need to call into the podcast. We're going to continue for another 10 minutes or so. So you want to call the 319 number, 527-6189, and hopefully we can get Baba Oduna back with us for next week because we wanted to have him on earlier, and we certainly want to make sure that he's able to give his information, but we're going to have to wrap up for tonight. So, Baba, what I need for you to do, because I still need to get closing comments from Minister Ismael, as well as, 2 minutes from Minister Ismael and from Baba Shaka. We need to get closing comments from them, so you have a minute or so to finish up.
I'm going to do this right quick. The Evergreen Division, number 50, that I came out of in Seattle, Washington, in the summer of 1968 as a Garveyite, it would be remiss of me if we would go quickly, if we were looking in our philosophy and opinions out of 75 entries of people who gave money to the Liberian project. We will see that 39 to 40 of these entries came from Seattle, Washington. Mother Sarah Lynch, Joseph Lynch, her husband, who saw the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey when he came through Seattle, Washington in 1921. And I was running up and down the basketball court, and I must say in my clothes that I happen to also have the experience of being a teacher at Muhammad University of Islam, number 51, under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Sister Beverly Marad and Sister Deborah Fazer, the National Rectresses of Muhammad University of Islam in Chicago, and the over 30 universities of Islam at that particular point in time. We got it because it was Mother Clara Evans Muhammad that stood in the door in 1934 and said, "You're not going to touch our children, not in the public school and over my living body, because you will be the one who will not be here." And as I came to you, I will pause in saying that is one God, one aim, one destiny. Africans, those at home and those abroad, and I'm thankful for those who came on before, and I just want to say I love each and every one of you. We have to look at our own internal difficulties and how, unfortunately, predominantly it was the men who, what we call, sued the UNIA African Community League for their salaries that they didn't earn themselves. But we are thankful for Lady Henrietta Vinton Davis, the fourth assistant president general later on, and for George Alexander McGuire of the African Orthodox Church, honorarily, and I'm going to park this helicopter. One God, one name, one destiny. Africa for the African, those at home and those abroad.
Oh, thank you, Baba Oduna. Okay, and we're going to get you back another time because we certainly want to hear more. Obviously, you have so much information to share with us, and we want to make sure that you can, you know, enlighten our extended family, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll definitely be bringing you back. Okay, we're going to get closing comments, of course, from Minister Ishmael and also from Brother Shaka Barak. But before we do, I just want to remind everyone, and I wasn't even able to bring this in for tonight because the conversation we were having was so good. But I want to remind everyone that we have 20 Sister Saints, and, of course, Saint Amy Josh Garvey is one of our Sister Saints, as well as Saint Clara Muhammad. And I have to mention that when we did one of our tributes here to Mother St. Clara Muhammad, it was the Lost Foundation here in Philadelphia that was kind enough to allow us to do that tribute at their headquarters here in Philadelphia. We haven't been able to do anything since COVID, but we definitely did something in the community to salute Mother Clara Muhammad, clearly around the work. When it came to education and having independent schools, et cetera. So thank you for reminding me of that, Baba Oduna. And also, I wanted to – yes. And I also want to mention, again, one of our other sister saints, Earth Day was yesterday. And while many are familiar with St. Rosa Parks, with the bus, they're not as familiar with her work that she did in fighting against the rape and the violations of black women and girls, particularly in the case of Recy Taylor. So we don't have time tonight. So yeah, we're going to. We have time tonight, but we will talk more about this. But yesterday was, of course, the born day of the great Rosa Parks. And again, we're going to put a little more emphasis on the parts that most don't talk about or know about, and that is the extraordinary work that she did in fighting, particularly the many rapes at that time that were occurring for our women and girls. And, of course, the one case that we can cite is that of Recy Taylor. So again, in the future, we'll be talking more about that family. So just, you know, put that as a side note. Okay, let's go and get some last comments. We're going to go to Brother Shaka Barak, get his closing comments, and then we'll have Minister close us out with his comments.
Thank you, Sister Empress Chi, for having this wonderful program and inviting these wonderful people on to discuss the, first of all, the exoneration of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. So those who have been listening or are listening to this recording, you can go to Justice 4, that's numeral 4, Garvey.org, and you can sign the petition. I want to certainly thank Brother Ishmael for being on this program. I look forward to talking with him in the future, because when you ask the question, what is the solution, the Nation of Islam and the Universal Negro Improvement Association have been the primary organizations in the 20th century that offer the solution. Yeah. But we also face the thing that you talked about in terms of the enemies. We were investigated, both infiltrated, both, and sabotaged, indicted, tried, convicted, sentenced, and imprisoned. Enemies among local white politicians, enemies among some church preachers, enemies among business people, enemies inside the UNIA and State of Islam, enemies of rival newspapers and organizations, enemies among the United States government, accused of teaching hate, and COINTELPRO from J. Edgar Hoover. But we also had things that we had in common called, we had storybooks for our children. We had lessons in civil service exams. We had important lessons in terms of knowledge. We had character development, discipline, obedience, security, Universal African Legions, Universal African Motor Corps, and the FOI, MGT, and the GTI. So we have an example that when we talk about the exoneration of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, maybe some of the great things that both of these organizations and institutions have done will come to the forefront, so people can see that you're not alone, that there are institutions and organizations that you could join that have some solutions that have worked in the past.
Ashe. All right, Brother Shaka. I definitely agree.
Ashe.
Thank you for that. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And before we go to Minister Ishmael and his closing comments, I just want to say, given the fact that the Million Woman March is up and coming and moving forward and has learned from those that you mentioned, of course, we look forward to being able to be one of the apparatuses that can now connect some of those things together, particularly with us being mothers and daughters and having the direct access to the children. Certainly, I'm hoping that as we proceed in this next decade, that we will be embraced accordingly. So with that said, let's go to Minister Ishmael for his closing comments.
Empress, I'd like to thank you and your wonderful guests for the just the knowledge that they have expounded to your listening audience. I hope that they see that unity can come about with our fight against the oppressors. Know that we need you in whatever pocket that you're in. We have chosen the international forum to fight for human rights under Silas Muhammad. We have began to formulate a constitution in which our people can come under, in which to fight for reparations. We also were led out into the international world by the Honorable Silas Muhammad's wife, Harriet Mashaki Muhammad. She was the first one. She is a lawyer. She is the first one to go out into the international world and begin to find out how they perceive us here in the wilderness of North America. So I would be remiss if I did not mention her work and her dedication as well as the many other sisters. And so we got to keep on in this fight. And, you know, whenever you need me, give me a call. And again, to your guests, I gained a lot of insight, and I hope to conversate with these brothers. Some of them seem like they're my elders, so I'm willing to sit and listen and learn and come under and help any way I can. You know how to contact me, and you can certainly give them my address here in Philadelphia with the Lost Foundation of Islam and my number. And with that, my sister, I say, please, go in peace and safety.
Okay. Thank you, Minister Ismael. All right, family. Well, we heard it from you all. Well, we haven't heard it from you all, so we're going to take a brief 2 more minutes. If you have a question or a comment, we're going to give you the mic, family, very briefly to share whatever you'd like to share. You can press 1 now. We certainly would love to have you with us. And so, with that said, we're going to get ready to close out, though. And again, if you have something brief that you'd like to share or a question that you may want to ask, we will certainly welcome you to do so at this time. In the meantime, we want to remind you again that MWM25 is now developing and being ready to come forward. Of course, the actual kickoff day will be October 25th, but prior to that, we will be in Washington, D.C. for our first National Reparatory Justice Summit and the pre-plebiscite convention. Now, this is, again, to just get the ball rolling. This is a 3-year project that we know it will take us at least 3 years. So we're committed to doing that, but we have to start somewhere. So, again, from September the 1st, through the 4th, we will be in Washington, D.C. For the Reparatory Justice Summit. And, of course, you all are certainly welcome and invited to participate. Okay? And we'll give you more information about it. Or if you want more information about it, you can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or you can text us at area code 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. Okay, doesn't seem like anyone has a question or a comment, so I guess we're going to close this out for tonight, family. We thank you all again for tuning in. I want to remind you again, for a Thorough Black Talk, you can check out Sister Keisha every Thursday on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and push in Thorough Black Talk. Also, you can catch Brother Mike. We just got a new edition of Community Cop. And you can catch out any of the editions of Community Cop also on YouTube with Brother Mike. And, of course, Brother Lee Robinson, Africa on the Move, is on Sunday. And he's on from 7 to 9 here on Blog Talk Radio. All right, family, again, we welcome all your input. We certainly welcome your donations. If you care to do so, please feel free to do so. You can use Cash App. $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. Or you can use PayPal and just email that to nchrproject@gmail.com. Again, ND, which is National Black Human Rights. So it's nchrproject@gmail.com. All right, family, we're going to close this session out. We thank all of the folks that tuned in. Of course, Baba Oduna, of course, the Minister Ismael, and, of course, Brother Shaka. We thank you all for tuning in, and definitely Dr. Julius Garvey. All right, we're going to leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. But remember, there will never be any real peace until there's truly justice. Because y'all know what we say, brothers. If there's no justice, there's no what?
Peace.
No peace. All right.
No peace.
All right, family. That's right. All right, so we'll be back next week, and we thank you all again. Continue to move on, and let's get this work done. And as the great Kwame Ture would say, we must not fail our ancestors. Till next time, promote your true agenda. Together we shall win. Peace out.